So we're here on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. And we're at the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis. And we were learning a pasuk in Yechezkel HaNavi. So let me just read the pasuk just to, you know, to have a soft landing for today. The pasuk says the following: Ko Amar Hashem Elokim. Now this chapter Mem Daled, which we read on Shabbos, is dedicated to the laws of Kohanim, and Yechezkel says the following: Kol ben nechar arel lev v'arel basar lo yovel el mikdashi. So we have a double phrase over here. On the one hand, we have the phrase ben nechar, and on the other hand, we have the phrase arel lev. Thank you. And then we have the phrase arel basar. Now, what's the difference between the two? So the first phrase, Arel Lev, that's referring to a mumar. A mumar is, again, that's a sugya unto itself, but a mumar is someone who rebels against God deliberately. And then we have the second phrase, which is an Arel Basar. That's a classical case of an Arel, meaning someone who did not subject himself to circumcision. So he's an Arel. Right? An Arel is the opposite of a Mohu. So that part of the pasuk we discussed yesterday, and we're up to the last part of the pasuk. And in the last part of the pasuk, he adds a phrase which the Gemara doesn't understand too well. Okay? And that phrase is the following. Here we're sort of fast forwarding from Pasuk Tes to Pasuk Yud Ches. And in Pasuk Yud Ches it says the following: Pe'erei Pishtim Yu Al Rosham. The hat that we'll call it a turban, that the Kohen wears when he does the Avodah, that's called Pe'er, is made of Pishtan, it's made of flax. U'mithnasei Pishtan, and the trousers that the Kohen wears as part of the Big Day Kuna is also made of Pishtan. And then it says, Lo Yachkaru Bayon. Now the word Yachkaru means when you tie a belt around the middle of your body, around the waist. And then it says Bayaza, Beis Yud Zayin Ayin. And the Gemara doesn't understand what this word Bayaza means. And that you'll see here at the end of Yud Ches Amud Beis, two lines up. My, what does it mean? Lo Yachkaru Bayaza. It seems that this word Bayaza doesn't appear anywhere else in Tanakh. Amar Abaye, Lo Yachkaru, the Kohanim amongst the begadim that they wore, the Big Day Kuna, one is called the Avnet. The Avnet is the belt that they wore around the waist. Lo Yachkaru, they shouldn't tie it b'makom shemazi'in. So if you take a look again at the word Bayaza, you'll see that it's made up of Yud Zayin Ayin. And that means to sweat. Right? Even in modern Hebrew, we talk about mezia. Mezia means to sweat. So they should avoid wearing the belt in a way that it would generate the liquid of sweat, the moisture of the sweat. And in the footnote here, he points out that the reason for this is because once the belt becomes saturated with sweat, then it's no longer crispy. It's no longer in its original state. And what we discussed yesterday was that at least l'chatchila, the Big Day Kahuna should be chadashim. Chadashim means they should be like brand new. So how do you tie a belt in a way that it might get caught in sweat? And how do you tie a belt to avoid and minimize getting caught in sweat? Kidasanya, we learned in the Braisa. The Braisa is going to mandate to the Kohanim exactly how and where they should wear this avnet. Kishem chogrim, when they tie the avnet, ein chogrim also, they should not tie it.
Where are you? I'm sorry.
I'm on the bottom line on Yud Ches Amud Beis.
Ah, okay.
You have it? Lo lemata mi masnehem, velo lemala mi atzilehem. Ella. Okay, so the last word on the page is Ella. So before we turn the page, the Brisa excludes two places, because if you tie it in any of these two places, it's going to generate a lot of sweat. What are the two places? The first place is Lamata Mimasnehem, meaning if they're wearing it too low, then what might happen is that the belly is going to flap over the belt. Do you follow what I mean? So that if it flaps over the belt is now, in a sense, sandwiched in between his body and the flesh that's covering the belt. And that's going to generate a lot of sweat. Mm. Number two, lola mala, but you shouldn't put too high, mi atzilehem. Now, what the Gemara understands here is that the elbows, right, if you, let's say you extend your arms, but close to your chest, so they form sort of like a, if you call it a 90 degree angle, if you follow what I mean, and that's going to tell us where the chagorah should be. If the avnet, this belt, is too high, in other words, he ties it, let's say if this, you know, draw a line at the elbows, if he ties it too high, then what happens is human beings have a tendency from time to time of putting their hands against their chest. And when he puts his hands against his chest, if the belt is underneath his hand level, it's again caught between the flesh of his chest and his arms, his hands. And that again is going to cause a great deal of sweat. Ella, and now we turn to Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Where should he then tie the belt? Keneged Atzile Yedehem. It should be not above the elbow level, but exactly parallel to the elbow level. Because when he folds his hands, he folds them a little bit higher than the elbow level. Do you follow what I mean? He folds it in this way. On the other end, if he wears the belt too low, it's going to get caught in the flap of his belly. And that's going to cause sweat. So all this is what Yechezkel Navi tells us, that lo yachgu bebaza, they should be particular meticulous to avoid placing the belt in a way that it generates sweat. Okay, now the Gemara tells a story. We always love to hear some stories. Amar Rav Ashi, Amali Huna Bar Nasan. Huna tells me the following story. Now, in the footnote here, he tells you a little bit of a biography about this Huna Bar Nasan. He was, in his generation, a paradigm of what's called Torah Ugdula B'Makom Echad. What that means is that he was a tremendous scholar, that's Torah, Ugdula, and he was very wealthy. You know, usually it's either or. You know, the Torah scholars are usually in the poorhouse. But he fit into this description of Torah Ugdula B'Makom Echad. And it seems that up until the end of his generation, when Rav Ashi came onto the scene, which is going to be the discussion about Rav Ashi, he was considered the greatest scholar of his time, this Huna Bar Nasan. At the same time, he was very wealthy. Now, why is this significant to know that he's wealthy? I mean, it's a nice piece of information about Huna Bar Nasan, but that's going to shed a light on this story. Zimna Chada, Huna Bar Nasan relates the following story. On one occasion, Havi Ka'imna, I was standing Kameh in front of the Izgadar Malka, the king by the name of Izgadar. Izgadar is a Persian name, and I was standing, says Huna Bar Nasan, in the presence of the king of Persia, and I was wearing a belt. Now, it doesn't say that he was wearing Big Day Kahuna. I don't think at that time the Beis HaMikdash was up and running. But he was wearing his belt. And where was his belt? It was pretty high up. Vahavi Midli Li, and the king himself actually pointed to him and told him to lower his belt. Himnoi v'tesei nila. Tesei means to lower it, and where it should be exactly parallel to the elbows, if the elbows were flat against your body. And that, said the king, is a much more beautiful way of wearing a belt. You know, if you look at people on the street, you'll always see, you know, some people wear their belt too high, some wear it too low, you know. In certain Hasidic circles, it's a style to wear it very low, in other circles to wear it very high. You know, but if a person wants to appear in a presentable way, he should wear his belt in the middle. So this is very fascinating. He is a scholar of in the Jewish world. He finds himself in the presence of the king of Persia, and the king tells him exactly where he should place his belt. The Amarli, and the king says to him, Mamleches Kanim v'goy kadosh, ksiv b'chu. This fellow is no ignoramus. He knows a pasuk in Chumash. And he tells him that we, the Jewish people, are a kingdom of priests and a kingdom of holiness. And therefore, you have to behave and present yourself, appear like a Kohen, even though you're not a Kohen. But nevertheless, you should look like a Kohen. And with regarding to a Kohen, with the belt of a Kohen, is lo yachbaru biyaza. They shouldn't wear their belt too high or too low. And therefore, the king took the option of pushing his belt down. It's not clear to me whether he actively pushed his belt down or he told them to push his belt down. Ki asoi kamei de amemar, and when Rav Ashi told this story in front of amemar, Amali, so amemar said, ikayim becha, the pasuk in Yeshayahu Anavi was fulfilled with regard to you, Huna Bar Nosan. And what is the prophecy of Yeshayahu Anavi? Vahayu melachim omnayich. Now, melachim means kings. Now, the word omnayich is a conjugated form of the word omen. Aleph, vav, mem, nun. We have to be careful here because instead of a cholom, if you put a kubutz, it's a totally different word. That's called umon, which means an artisan or a professional. Omen is someone who raises a child until the child is older. It's like a nursing father in a sense. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu calls himself in Chumash an omen, that he is the one who carried the people of Israel from their infancy. And Yeshaya is now foretelling a time in which the kings of the non-Jewish world will raise the Jews up. They'll sort of like to raise a child. They'll service the child in a way that a nursing father will serve his baby. And here the king served you, Huna Bar Nosan, by telling you exactly how you should be dressed, and that's a fulfillment of the prophecy of Yeshayahu Navi. So what fascinates me about this is two things. Number one, to find a king of another nation that would actually serve a Jew, that's strange in and of itself. And secondly, this prophecy of Yeshayah is foretelling what's going to happen at the end of days. You know, Huna Bar Nosan did not live at the time of the ultimate redemption. But yet, there were, I guess, flashes or moments of time in Jewish history when some of the prophecies regarding the redemption were fulfilled. You know, little dots in the history of the Jewish people. And one of them is in this story of Huna Bar Nosan. I'd like to also suggest, again, I didn't see anyone who says this, that maybe the story here is attached to the sugya of Big Day Kahuna to add another sort of thought process as to why, you know, the Hashkafa, why the Torah commands the Kohen to wear these four begodim, and not only that, to wear them in a particular way. The belt has to be exactly just so. And the answer is that Big Day Kahuna called in the Torah Tiferes. Tiferes means splendor or beauty. And a Kohen who's serving in the divine service in the Mikdash has to present himself in a beautiful way. And some people think that the Torah has no care or significant, puts no significance in the way a person dresses or the way they appear. And that's simply not true. And the paradigm that personifies the idea of how you appear is Big Day Kahuna. The Gemara tells us about the Rebbe, that when Rebbe appeared in front of Alexander, Alexander said, I had a a dream about you, and in my dream you appeared so beautifully in the way you were dressed and so forth and so on. And of course Hashem was the first one to actually dress up man back at the time in the aftermath of the Chet of Adam HaRishon. Okay, now we want to talk a little bit more about the case of Chatzitza. Chatzitza means when there's a separation between the Big Day Kahuna and the body of the Kohen. The Big Day Kahuna have to be directly attached to the body of the Kohen. And in order to indicate how this works, we're going to study a Braisa, actually a Mishnah, in Masechta Erev, in Tnan Hasam. This is on Daf Kuf Gimel Amid Beis. Kohen Shaloka Be'etzba'o. The Kohen has a wound on his finger. And now he has to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And it's very difficult, almost impossible, for him to serve because of this wound, unless he bandages it around. But if he bandages, then he might create a chatzitza. He might be separating his body from the Big Day Kahuna, which have to have direct contact. And yet, to our surprise, the Mishnah says, Korech Aleha Gami. He's allowed to tie his wound around with something called a gummy. A gummy is made up of some sort of a grass that grows in the ground. It's very dry. And because of the ingredients, the mineral content of this grass, it is very beneficial for the wound. It's really healthy. And this we're going to allow him to do in the Migdash. So let's read it again. Kohen Shaloka Betzbo. The Kohen has a wound on his finger. This is going to be very significant that it's on his finger, because Lechora, the concept of Chatzitz is irrelevant to the finger, because the Big Day Kahuna don't cover his hands. So that this gummy is not separating as a Chatzitza between his body and Big Day Kahuna. So that's one issue that we're going to have to deal with in this sugya. The other issue is going to be, why would this Mishnah appear in Masechta Erevin? Masechta Erevin addresses itself not to the laws of Migdash and the Avodas HaKohen, but rather to the laws of Shabbos. And not only that, this Mishnah itself is addressing a case on Shabbos. So then, one question answers the other. If I ask you, why is this Mishnah in Masechta Erevin? The answer to that is because the Mishnah is talking about a case of Shabbos. The Kohen is doing the Avod on Shabbos. And if the Kohen is doing the Avod on Shabbos, then we have a problem. Because this Gomi is a healing process. And we've discussed in the past, if you recall, that Refuah on Shabbos is prohibited. You're not allowed to add to the body anything that brings from a state of illness. Again, I'm not talking about a cholish yesh bo sakana, you know, if his life is in danger, but any sort of healing process. That's why we don't take medications on Shabbos. And here also, this gavi is not just meant to protect the wound, like a band-aid, but it's also meant to... It's also meant to heal the wound. Okay? And the answer is that for you and I, this would be prohibited on Shabbos. The only reason this is mutter is because who are we talking to?
Kohen.
A Kohen. And where is the Kohen? He's in the Beis HaMikdash. And the law is that Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, which means that those rabbinic enactments that were meant to keep a person far away from violating the Shabbos, do not apply in the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. Okay? So again, on the one hand, Chachamim instituted an Isur HaShvus that prohibits Refuah on Shabbos. On the other hand, we have a principle of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. So for the sake of the Beis HaMikdash and any sort of service that's necessary in the Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanan are going to overlook their gzera, their shvus, and permit it. Again, we're not permitting an Issa Doraisa on Shabbos. There's no malach that he's violating, but he's healing a wound, and that would come under a shvus to Rabbanan, and that was mutter in Mikdash. Avalo b'medina, but outside the Beis HaMikdash, if it's Shabbos, the Chachamim prohibited refuah b'Shabbos, he's not allowed to tie his wound with a gummy. He'll find a band-aid or some sort of bandage. The im lahotzi mimenu dam, apparently in some cases, it would be a healthy procedure to remove the dam from the body, because the dam might be infected. So you want to squeeze out the dam. Is kanu kan, whether it's in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Medina, asur. Because when you remove dam on Shabbos, that's called a malacha d'oraisa. And certainly here in this case, we had a case, if you recall, a few months ago where he removes dam in order to feed an animal. So that was Otsas Dam, which had a tikkun to it. Some say, Rav Shimon is of the opinion that in the case of Chabura, Meleches Chabur Yechayev, even if it's Mekalkel. But here it's not a case of Mekalkel in any event. So he's doing something that's healthy. This is a procedure that's healthy. And he's not allowed to do it if his purpose is to remove the dam. Because then he violates an Issur Torah. And in Mikdash, we're not gonna permit violating the Shabbos and one of the Melechas of Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Berei d'Rav Chiya, Lo Shanu, when do we apply this principle that a Kohen is allowed, for the sake of his avoda, to tie this gummy onto his wound? Ella, gummy is something that's relatively temporary. Temporary meaning you put it on, you take it off. That's not called a significant kind of levush, of a beged, of wearing a beged. Aval tziltzul katan, however, if it's a belt, right, a belt has a certain thickness to it, so if he makes out of this grass, he makes a belt in order to, a gummy to tie it around his wound, then havi yiter begadim. Then, says Rabbi Yehuda, he invalidates his avoda, because the Kohen is allowed to wear 4 begadim, but not, and he has to, but not 5 begadim. And now he's wearing an extra belt. So Rabbosai, keep in mind that we're not talking about chatzitza, but rather about yitur begadim. Why? Because there's no chatzitza on his fingers. He's not wearing any big dekun on his fingers. Is that crystal clear? But on the other hand, he's wearing a beged. That's called a tziltzul katan, a narrow belt. And a narrow belt is also considered a beged. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but in certain places in the world where there's no eruv, what they do is, in order to carry their keys to shul, they attach it to a small belt. They actually produce these belts where you can tie the key to the belt. It's a very thin kind of belt. It hooks in like this. And that's going to avoid carrying on Shabbos because it's a beged, it's a levush. Here, in this context, a big day kahuna, a levush, is a very negative thing. On Shabbos, it's good to wear a levush because then you're not carrying it, but it's a bad thing to do in the case of big day kahuna because of yitur begadim. And if he adds an extra beged to the 4 begadim that he has to wear, that invalidates his avoda. Now the whole reason why we're allowing him to put on this gummy is in order to facilitate the avod in the Mikdash. So obviously we want to do it in a way that he can perform the avod, and it'll be avodik shera. But if he wears a tziltzel cotton around his, you know, if his gummy makes it into a tziltzel, some sort of a chagora, then his avod is an avod psula because of the principle of what? Yitur begadim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lo Amru Yiter Begadim Ela B'makom Begadim. It's not enough that you calculate the object, you know, and define it as a beged. The question is he wearing it as a beged? If you have a lavush that covers the body or serves to keep his trousers from falling down, that's called a lavush. But here, he's wrapping it around his finger. That's not a lavush. That's not a makom begadim. And therefore, aval shaloba makom begadim, even if he takes this tzilzil katan and he wraps it around his wound on his finger, that's not where you wear a beged. A belt is not meant to be worn around a finger. So again, getting back to my paradigm of a Shabbos case where there's no Eruv, would you be allowed to wear a belt around your finger? And I've seen people do this. Rabbi Yochanan is saying it's not allowed. Why? Because that's not called a beged. A beged has to be b'makom begadim, a place where you normally would wear a beged. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, would allow the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash to tie his finger around with its tzilzil katan. Ah, you'll tell me it's chatzitz. I'm sorry, it's yitur begadim. It's not yitur begadim because it's not. It's not a beged. Ah, you'll tell me, how can he do this? It's a ripui. It's healing up his wound. And we have a shvus that we don't allow refu on Shabbos. The answer is, b'migdash, for the purpose of the avod of the migdash, we're going to allow and look aside from a shvus. So now the Gemara asks, what about chatzitza? V'tepuk le mishum chatzitza. Well, the Gemara thinks, at this point, that even if Rav Yochanan is right, that a belt worn around the finger is not called Yitur B'Gadim, it doesn't have the status of a beged, but we have another problem. And that is chatzitza. Oh. Now why is this a chatzitza? So I told you that a chatzitza is between his body and the B'Gadim. However, there's another din of chatzitza. And that is between his body and that which he's holding. In the case of Yodayim, of hands, he's holding a kli shares. And when he holds the kli shares, he has to have direct contact between the kli and his hand. Now, once he surrounds his hand with a gummy, then there's no longer direct contact between his hand and the kli shares. That itself should constitute a chatzitza. So the Gemara answers, be small. You're right. If it would be his right hand, and that's the hand that he does the avoda in, and we said in our mission at the beginning of this parak that the avoda has to be done, has to be performed with the right hand, that would be a serious problem of chatzitza, and therefore even Rabbi Yochanan would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that he can't tie around a gummy around his finger on his right hand. However, what Rabbi Yochanan was referring to is when he had a case where he had a wound on his left hand, and he's not doing his avoda with the left hand, and therefore there's no problem with this gummy, and even if it's a tzilzil katan. So again, let's whittle it down. We have now a wound on his left hand, on Shabbos. Is he allowed to wrap it up? So we're saying, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he's allowed. Why? Because he's a Kohen. And he's doing the avod in the Migdash. And we need number one, the refuah in Migdash is Ein Shvus B'Migdash. Number two, there's no problem of Yitur Begadim because he's not wearing this belt in a place where you normally wear a belt. So it's not considered a lavush, a garment. Number two, it's not a chatzitza because he is doing his avoda with his right hand and not with his left hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Scratch that. He's doing his avoda. Yeah, I meant to say, where is he tying the gummy? Where does he have an injury? On his left hand. And that he's allowed to do. Now here I have to add one piece, I think. And again, I didn't see this anywhere. But it occurs to me that if his wound is on his left hand, why is this considered Ein Shvus B'Migdash? If this is a real refuah, then he doesn't need to heal his left hand for the sake of the avoda. So I think what's going on here, if I'm not mistaken, is that the Gemara is saying that his ability to function, you know, as a Kohen with all his marbles and concentrate on his avoda depends upon alleviating the suffering in his wound. If it's a serious enough wound, it causes pain and he's in a state of anguish. I don't know. Again, somebody should have said that, and I don't find anyone saying that. Inami. Now the Gemara offers a second alternative. Shelo b'makom avoda. What does this mean? That when the Kohen does the avoda with his right hand, he holds the klisharis in the palm of his hand, on the inside of his hand. His injury was on the outside of his hand. And therefore, there's no chatzitza here if he places the belt on the outside of his hand. And all this entire presentation of Rabbi Yochanan, with regard to Yitur Begadim and to solve the problem of Chatzitza, Pliga the Rav is against Rav, Rav disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rav, Amar Rav Chizda. Now we're talking about a Kohen who has a Chatzitza on his body. B'makom Begadim, he says that clearly if the Chatzitza separates between his flesh and the Beged, that's in all cases, no matter what the size of this chatzitza is, it could be even a hair's breadth, that's a chatzitza. And it completely undermines the avoda. Afilu nema achas chotzetzes. Even one hair, if it separates his body from his big day kahuna, that's a chatzitza. Shalobimakom begodim. If, let's say, he has something on his body, but it doesn't separate his body from the big day kahuna, for example, let's say he has something on his hands in a way that it doesn't separate him from Big Day Kahuna. Nevertheless, says Rava, it would qualify as a chatzitza if it's large enough. What does it mean it's large enough? Shalosh al shalosh. If it has the dimensions of three, what's called three etzbos on three etzbos. So let's say an etzba is, let's say, for argument's sake, about 4 inches. So 3 by 3 would be 12 inches by 12 inches. You know, whatever it is, if a large size beged is worn on his body, then says Rava, that beged becomes a beged even to pasul the avodas hakohuna, even if it's not on. It's not on a makom begadim. Pachos mikan ein chotzetzes. If it's less than 3 etzbos on 3 etzbos, then it's not a chatzitza. So whereas Rav agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, shelo b'makom begadim, that if this is a very small beged, it's less than shalosh al shalosh, it's not a chatzitza. However, he disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan in the case of shalosh al shalosh, because whereas Rabbi Yochanan says in an absolute way, if it's shalom b'makom begadim, it's not a chatzitza, Rava says that even if it's shalom b'makom begadim, if it's a levush, if it's a beged, it has the qualifications of the size of shalosh al shalosh, then it is a beged. And if it's a beged, he's wearing an extra beged, and even if it's not, you know, if it's not a classical chatzitza in the sense that it doesn't separate his body from the big day kahuna because it's on his hand, let's say in this case, but nevertheless it passes the avoda midin yitur begadim because he's wearing an extra beged. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, shalom makom begadim, like for example on his etzba, on his finger, that's not called a beged. Why is shalom makom begadim? I don't care what the size of it is, it's irrelevant. It's an absolute statement. It's not called a beged, and therefore would not in any way undermine and disqualify his avoda. But if it's b'makom begadim, then you have a case of a yitur begadim. Now, what we don't know here, but it's implicit, if it's, let's say, b'makom begadim, are there any minimum shiurim, minimum size, to make it into a beged, to qualify as a beged according to Rabbi Yochanan? At this point, I would say that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rava that if it's b'makom begadim, then afilu neima achas chotzetzes, even the smallest hair's breadth would be a chatzitza. However, when we're talking about shalom b'makom b'gadim, so we're not interested in chatzitza because it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, but we're interested in yitur b'gadim, wearing an extra beged. And here Rabbi Yochanan says, if it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, it's not a levush, it's not a beged, there's no problem with yitur b'gadim. Comes along Rav and he says, no, if it's a significant size, then it qualifies as a beged, and if it qualifies as a beged, it's yitur b'gadim. That's what we have. So the sugya continues now. And the Gemara now calculates the various opinions. And we started, if you remember, with the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that if this gummy is a tziltzel katan, it's a belt, which is a levush, then it passels even shalom b'makom b'gadim. Ad Rabbi Yochanan, vadepli, for sure, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan held that if it's shalom b'makom b'gadim on his hands, there's no such thing as yitur b'gadim at all. Even if it's a large shalosh al shalosh. That's the way the Gemara understands it. Rav, on the other hand, holds that if it's shalosh al shalosh, it's possible even if it's shalom b'makom b'gadim. And now the Gemara wants to know, how do we compare Rabbi Yehuda with Rav? So Rabbi Yehuda certainly disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yehuda accepts a psul of yitur b'gadim, even shalom b'makom b'gadim. Rabbi Yochanan outright rejects that in all circumstances there is no such thing as yitur b'gadim, shalom b'makom b'gadim. But now let's compare Rabbi Yehuda to Rav. Ad Rabbi Yehuda b'rei de Rab Chia mi lema de pligi. Shall we assume that Rav would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? Why? What's the svara to say that he disagrees? Rabbi Yehuda says that in the case of the injured kohen, he's not allowed to tie his finger with a belt. And that means that if it's a belt, it's called the levush. Now, how large is this belt? The assumption is that this belt is less than shalosh al shalosh. It's just a belt that he uses to wrap around his finger. That's a very thin belt. And nevertheless, even though it's less than the shear of a levush of 3x3, and it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, despite that, Rabbi Yehuda says it's called yitur b'gadim. Rav, on the other hand, holds that a beged minimally has to have a shear of gimel al gimel in order to passel the avodah shalom b'makom b'gadim and qualify as yitur b'gadim. So Gemara says, no, I can reconcile Rabbi Yehuda with Rav. Shiny tziltzel katan dechashiv. Even though universally we require a beged, that's what? That's shalosh al shalosh. And Rabbi Yehuda and Rava are of one ilk. They both agree, one piece of cloth, pardon the pun, right? That in order to qualify as a beggar, it has to be what? Shalosh al shalosh. The exception to the rule, and this is something that Rava could also agree to, is when you wrap around a belt around your finger, that belt in and of itself, since it has a function, and probably the manufacturers sell it, even though it's very thin, notice most begadim, if you look at your begadim, okay, I don't know about a tie, you know, a necktie maybe is different. It would be like a belt, right? A belt is not shalosh al shalosh. Yeah, it's barely one etzva in most cases. Even the cowboys, I think, you know, I don't even know if they have an etzva, but certainly not three etzvos. And yet, you wear it as a levush, and it functions to, you know, to keep you dressed. Otherwise, your pants will fall down, right? So you have to be dressed with a belt. And if that be the case, even Rava would accept the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that you don't need shalosh al shalosh. So you see something interesting here. The halach of shalosh al shalosh to create a beged is not some sort of exeris hakos of a separate halacha that anything less than shalosh shalosh is not a beged. It's halach of chashivus. When is a cloth considered significant? You know, you go into a cloth manufacturer, he's not going to sell you a teeny little piece of cloth that's less than shalosh shalosh shalosh. But there is such a thing as a beged that has chashivus by virtue of its function, even if it's not shalosh shalosh shalosh. And now the Gemara is going to quote another alternative version of the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan. Lishna achrina, an alternative version. Amri leah. they passed on, they transmitted regarding this machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'reid Rabbi Chiya lo shanu ela gami aval tziltzil katan chotzeitz. Okay, so here it's word for word what we had before in Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, except instead of the word Yitur B'gadin, he uses the word Chotzeitz. Okay, there's a long discussion here about why he changes that word. But it's really not a Chatzitza because, again, he's not wearing anything over his hand, any B'gdei Kohuna. So obviously he's talking about Yitur B'gadin. Oh, now here's where it changes in the alternative version. For Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lo Amru Chatzitza B'pachos Misholosh Al Sholosh Ela B'makom B'gadim. Rabbi Yochanan says that this tziltzil katan is less than 3x3. And if it's less than 3x3, then it's not a beged. Even though it's a tziltzil katan, even though it has a certain chashivus, meaning Rabbi Yochanan holds it's an absolute requirement in beged, in a levush, that it has to be sholosh al sholosh. Aval shalom b'makom b'gadim. If it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, so he's wearing this tziltzil cotton around his finger, that's not where you normally wear a belt, is shalosh al shalosh chotzetzos, pachos mikan eino chotzetzos. And then it comes out that Rabbi Yochanan is repeating the shita of Rava. And that's what the Gemara says now, v'hainu de Ravam Rav Chizda. That's identical with the statement of Rava, the name of Rav Chizda, that there is a halach of Yitur Begadim, even Shalom B'makom Begadim, but only if it's a beged of significant size, which means that it's Gimel al Gimel. So if we want to summarize the difference between the first Lishna and the second Lishna, it all addresses one question. What's the relationship between Rabbi Yochanan and Rava? Rava says that there is Yitur B'gadim, even Shalom B'makom B'gadim, but only if it's a minimum shear of Shalosh Al Shalosh. Did Rabbi Yochanan accept such a thing? In the first Lishna, Rabbi Yochanan said, no, Shalom B'makom B'gadim, there's no such thing as a Levush. It never could be a Levush, Shalom B'makom B'gadim. Whether it's Shalosh Al Shalosh, whether it's a Gumi, that's a Tziltzil Katan, in all cases it's not. But in the second Lishna, we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan basically embraced the Shita of Rava, and if you have Shalom B'makom B'gadim, a beged that's significant in size and it's shalosh al shalosh, then enochinami, that's called yitur begadim, and it undermines and disqualifies the avodah. So the Gemara says, lema pligya adar Rabbi Yehuda bereder Rabbi Chiya. Now Rabbi Yehuda, if you remember, said that a tziltzil katan, which is less than shalosh al shalosh, is possible, even though it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, and even though it's not shalosh al shalosh. Rava says that if it's shalom b'makom b'gadim, you need shalosh al shalosh as a minimum. So shall we say now that the shita of Rabbi Yehuda is antithetical to that of Rava? So Gemara answers, no. Shiny tziltzil katan dechashiv. Rava would agree that in the case of a tziltzil katan, which is a belt, and it serves in and of itself as a function, as a beged, it is a beged, it's a levush, and therefore there's yitur begadim. Rava only requires shalosh al shalosh when we're dealing with a flat cloth, but it has no function. That's according to Rava. Now, again, we explained that according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Kohen is allowed to wind this tziltzil katan around his finger, and it's not called yitur begadim. So it comes out now that there is, even according to the second Lishna, a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Rava. We thought that according to the second Lishna, Rabbi Yochanan should be identified with Rava, that one shita, and therefore it all depends upon shalosh al shalosh. But now we're saying no, that Rava would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that if it's a tziltzil katan, that gives it chashivus and that substitutes for the requirement of shalosh al shalosh. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says no, it's got to be shalosh al shalosh. That's what we saw in Rabbi Yochanan in the second Lishna of Rabbi Yochanan. Aval shalom b'makom b'gadim, shalosh al shalosh chotzetzos, pachos mikan eino chotzetzos. So the Gemara asks Ula Rabbi Yochanan, my iri gami. Lishmeina tziltzil katan. Why did Rabbi Yochanan Why did the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yochanan, address the case of a gummy? A gummy is some sort of a piece of almost like a bandage, a piece of grass that goes around his finger. Why not tell me even a greater chiddush that even a tzilzil katan, even a belt, which is normally considered a lavush, is not usur? It's not called yitur begadim because it's shalom v'makom begadim. And the Gemara answers, Milsag of Urche Kamashmal and Gummy Masi. The Gemara wants to tell you on the side, you should know that I have a Chiddush here in Gummy. It's a Chiddush not in Hilchas. In Hilchos Migdash and Avodas HaKohen and Begadim, because in Dide Begadim it would have been a bigger Chiddush to tell you about Tzilzil Katan, but it's a Chiddush in Hilchos Refuah. We have to know what is to be done with a wound and how do you heal a wound. And not only that, it's telling you that even this case is considered Ein Shvus B'Migdash, meaning that even though it's a marape, it's something that should come under the Isur Refuah, nevertheless, because of the overriding factor of Migdash, and for the sake of the Avodah, we're going to permit. Boy, Rava had the following suffix. Nichnaso lo ruach bebigdo mahu. What happens if there's air that entered into the space between, created a space between his body and the big day kuhuna? Shall we consider this a chatzitza? Now, a chatzitza normally means that there's something, a physical object that separates his body from the big day kuhuna. Here, there's no physical object, it's just air. So what's the suffix? The Gemara says, Al Bisaro Be'inon. When the Torah says that he should wear the begadim, the Torah went out of its way to say that he should wear the begadim al begadim. This is in Vayikra Vav. It says, V'lovash HaKohen, etc., etc. Al Bisaro. Michnas Eibad, Yilbash Al Bisaro. Meaning, it has to be completely, directly connected to his basar. And there can't be any space between his basar and his beggar. That's what Rava said. Therefore, air itself might be a chatzitza. Oh, Dilma, should we say no? What does it mean, al bisaro? The Torah means derech levisha bakach. The Torah means that you should wear it the way you would normally wear a beggar. And normally you wear a beggar al bisaro. But if, let's say, there's air in between his basar and the beggar, that's not called a chatzitza. That's not a physical object. It doesn't really separate. And you know, it's not that he's doing or he's wearing his begadim in an unusual way. You know, to say that there's a chatzitza, if there's a physical object between his beged and his body, that's not derech levisha. That's not the normal way that you wear a beged, and therefore it undermines the kiyum of al basaro. But if it's just airspace, that doesn't undermine al basaro. Now Rava goes on with a second suffix. Kina mahu shetochutz. What happens if he has a little bit of a bug that got in caught in between his basar and his beged? So the Gemara says, Mesa lo tiboilach. If it's a dead bug, it's already died, then for sure, the vadei chaitza, it certainly is a chatzitza. What's Rav's suffix? Chaya mai. It's a live bug. Mi amrina kevet the asya v'asa goes back and forth. Revisa hi velo chaitza. Revisa means that's the way it grows. In other words, it grows and it develops until it finally leaves his basar. So again, we're talking about very small bugs over here that hopefully we don't have them on our body, but you might have one on your body. So what's the story of the Kohen? And Rava vacillates back and forth as to whether or not this live bug is a chatzitza. Because basically, this kina is ba'av ha'oleches. In other words, it comes and it goes. As long as it's alive. It's got motion, it's got it can relocate itself. And therefore, that's called derech gidula. That's the way it grows. So that's not considered eino derech levisha b'kach. But if it's a dead bug, you want to get rid of that. That's already a chatzitza. Oh, Dilma, what's the tzad to say that even if the bug is still alive and it's here on a temporary basis, it's just growing until it jumps out, it still is a chatzitza. Came in the carpet alay. The Kohen doesn't want this bug on his body. It's chaitze, that makes it into a chatzitza. In other words, even though this bug is only here very temporarily, nevertheless, since the Kohen wants to get rid of it, it really bothers him. It's like, for example, you have the question of a woman who who wears a ring around her finger, then she does Netilas Yadayim. Does that ring become a chatzitza? So the halacha says, well, what does she do when she needs dough? Does she take off her ring or does she not take off her ring? If she takes off her ring, it means she's makpid, she doesn't want to get any dough caught under the ring. If she's not makpid, then she leaves the ring on, then it's not a chatzitza. Why? Because we want to know how much would she be makpid that there wouldn't be any water when she washes the Netilas Yadayim that went underneath her ring. So some ladies don't care about what gets caught underneath their ring, and even when they need the dough, need with a K, right? Need the dough, they don't take off their ring. So here too, the Gemara wants to suggest that with regard to this kina, you know, the Kohen is very sensitive. He wants to get rid of this kina. It's a live kina. He wants to get it off his body. That's a called a chatzitz. Now we get to suffix number 3. Afar ma'u sheyochotz. What happens if some dirt from the ground, some dust gets caught between his body and his beged? Varechai. That for sure is a chatzitz, because again, it's a physical object. Ella, but what's the suffix of Rava? Avak afar. He's got very thin dust, and you can't even feel it. It's like a powder, you know, a very thin powder, mahu. Then the Gemara has another suffix. I think this is number 4. Beis hashechi mahu sheyochotz. What happens if he wears the ketones, you know, which is the tonic that covers the top part of his body, and it's very wide around the armpits. In other words, it sags down, so it's not completely samud, you know, attached to his body. And I'm trying to think. My shirt, now that I realize, is actually connected to my armpit. But apparently, the ketones that was worn by the Kohen, very often it would be a little bit loose in the armpit. So it's not connected. So should we say al besoro be'inan valeka? You need that the beged be al besoro mamish attached to his basar, and it's not. Or Dilma, shall we say derech levisha makach? Very often people wear begadim and it's loose under the arm and it's not connected to the body. And if it's derech levisha, that's enough. Now here the achronim want to know, why is this a new chiddush lechora? This should fit into some of the other discussions that Rava raised about airspace between the beged and his body. And if we say that airspace is not considered a chatzitza because it doesn't undermine derech levisha, that's the way you wear it, and sometimes air gets underneath your beged. So here also, you know, you wear a beged in a way that it doesn't come absolutely connected to his armpits. So the Gemara seems to be repeating the same suffix. So he tells you in the footnote to look in the Rashash. So maybe we'll get a chance, I don't know. But I just want to get to the final suffix of Rava. Hichnis yado letocheko mahu. What happens if the Kohen placed his arm, his hand, underneath his beged, on his chest? And what is the suffix here? Gufo michayitz. Shall we say that another part of his body that doesn't belong to this, right, to this location, it shouldn't normally be located between his chest and the beged, is therefore it's a chatzitza? Olo, or should we say no? It's still part of his body, and only a foreign element, the outside of the body, is a chatzitza. The Gemara says, Nema mau shetochutz. Okay, this is already another suffix. What happens if you have a hair or a very thin thread? Should it be a chatzitza? So Gemara says, I don't understand your question. Nema varechaitze. We already learned before that a thin hair is a chatzitza. Ela nema midduldelis. What happens if one of the threads of the Big Day Kahuna itself got out of place and it's loose, it's still connected to his beged? Mahu, is that called a chatzitza between his beged and the levush? Do we say that since it's still attached to the beged, it's part of the beged and it's not a chatzitza? Or should we say no, that it's already out of its place, it's already been removed from its normal place, And even though it's still technically attached to the beged, it's a chut. It's like any sort of name or any sort of thread, which is a chatzitza. That was all Rav. And now we have Mar Bar Avashi. Boy, Mar Bar Avashi, he had another suffek. He said, look, you want to know what happens if he puts his hand inside his chest? And you want to suggest that his yad, insofar as it's part of his goof, is not a chatzitza. Or maybe it is a chatzitza. But yotza saro bibigdo mahu. What happens if the hair on the head of the Kohen is very long and it comes down until it goes underneath his beged? So again, in this case, you're talking about hair. You know, the arm, the hand, when it goes underneath the beged, that's part of his body, clearly. But now we're talking about a hair. Hair is already a little bit less than part of the body. Mal, sa'aro kegufo, shall we still say it's his hair? And therefore it's not a chatzitz, it's part of his goof. Olav kegufo tomi. In other words, if in the hand it's not a chatzitz because it's part of his goof, what about a hair that's come from his head and still attached, it's growing on, you know, it's growing from his head? Shall we say that that's also like yad, it's also kigufo? Or should we say no, sar is not like goof, sar is a separate entity, and therefore it's a chatzitz. Now the Gemara addresses the following question: is a Kohen who's doing the avoda allowed to wear tefillin? So again, in the case of tefillin shel yad, we have a real serious problem, because the tefillin shel yad is a chatzitza between his body and the begadim. But what about tefillin shel rosh? Tefillin shel rosh, even though he's wearing a turban on his head, there may be room between the turban and the end of his hairline to wear tefillin shel rosh. So would that be a chatzitza? Should we encourage the Kohen to wear at least tefillin shel rosh while he's doing the avodah in the mikdash?
Can you do that? Wear one without the other?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. If you only have shel rosh, you wear a shel rosh. There are two separate mitzvahs in Taryak. I'm glad you asked that question, because I took it for granted without even thinking. You know, there are a lot of stories about the Jews when the camps were liberated. You know, there was a Jew in the camp who saved tefillin, but sometimes he was able to save and hide tefillin shel rosh, sometimes tefillin shel yad, and then the Jews, they were starving and they looked like this, and yet they were waiting on line just to put on tefillin, because some of them hadn't seen tefillin for years. They went from one camp to the other. So is the Kohen wearing tefillin? In other words, on the one hand, we might say that even if he could wear the tefillin in a way that it's not a chatzitza, that's only possible in the shel rosh, because there's still room on his forehead, or above his forehead, I should say, but nevertheless he's wearing an extra beged. Now this is fascinating, and this is sugi also in Erevin, about tefillin, that tefillin is not called masoi, it's not carrying on Shabbos, but rather it's considered a beged, it's a levush, which is very good on Shabbos. So the Gemara has a case where he accidentally left his tefillin out in the open in a place where Chas v'Sholem, the sanctity of the tefillin could be violated, and he has to desperately get it back into the house to protect the tefillin. The Gemara says, can he wear it on his head? And that would make it into a levush, and it's not carrying, it's not a masli, it's a levush. The Gemara says, Eino chinami, he's allowed to do so. The Gemara says, Sofik, can he wear two pairs of tefillin at the same time? If he left out two pairs of tefillin. So here, in the context of Big Day Kahuna, the fact that tefillin is a levush is a negative factor, because if it's a levush, it's an extra malbush. Oh, should we say no? That it's not really considered a chatzitza because it's a mitzvah. And if it's a mitzvah, it's like attached to his body. It's almost like part of his body. And that's then it's not Yitur B'God. Now that was what Rav Zera originally asked. Now he adds a little bit of an enhancement to his question, a clarification. He says, "Aliba deman diomer lila lavsman tefillinu lo tiboy lecha." According to one opinion, and this is the sugya in Masechta Erevin and in other places in Shas, that we don't wear tefillin at night, then there's no question that we have a problem of chatzitza here with tefillin. Why? Came into Laila Chaitzi, since at night if he wore these tefillin, it would be a chatzitza. And why is that? Because there's no mitzvah to wear tefillin at night, according to this particular opinion. And if there's no mitzvah, you don't have that it's not an extension of the guf, it's a levush, and therefore it's yitur begadim. And came into Laila chaytzi, yom nami chaytzi. In other words, we're not going to say that, well, with regard to the avodah that he does at night, which is called haktaras emurim, it's considered yitur begadim, and then we're going to say that in the daytime, It's not a chatzitza. It's not yitur begadim. It's not a beged, and he's allowed to wear tefillin shel rosh. It doesn't make sense that the avodah of laila should be more chomer than the avodah of yom. And if in the avodah of laila these tefillin are a chatzitza because lav zman tefillin hu, then for sure it's going to be a chatzitza by day kiti boilcha. But in what context did I ask my question? Lamandiyam, according to the opinion who says Lila's zman tefillin, that in the midst of tefillin, not only by day but even by night, my, how do we define tefillin? Is it considered an extra beged or it's part of his guf? Mitzvah de gufei chayitz or lo chayitz? Shall we say that even though it's a mitzvah on his guf to wear tefillin by day or by night, it's still a chatzitza? Why? Because adarava, the tefillin is an extra levush, so he's now wearing an extra beged. Or should we say no? It's batel to his guf. It's part of his guf. Igalgil milsa. The story, rolled around. This question rolled around. Umatel lekami to Rav Ami, and it came in front of Rav Ami. Omar lei. So Rav Ami said what he heard about this suffix, Talmud Aruch Hu Biyadenu, which basically means we have a tradition regarding this question. What is our tradition? Tefillin Chotzitzos. And at this point, we get the impression, if we stopped here, that it's clear that the Gemara is coming to a conclusion based on Rav Ami, that we have a tradition that's been transmitted for many generations that tefillin is a chatzitza, and if the Kohen wears the tefillin shel rosh, his avoda is psula. And that's because he's wearing an extra beged. Meisvei, so they attacked Rav Ami from a brisa. How can you tell me that that tefillin is a chatzitza? The brisa tells us, a very famous brisa, with some of this brisa was integrated into our tefillas musaf that we recited on Yotav. It says, "Kohanim b'avodason, u'levim b'duchanon, v'Yisrael b'mamadam, p'turim min atfila, u'min atfilin." That, the all of Klal Yisrael, the menfolk, would divide up into 24 groups, and they would be called upon to show up in the Migdash for Ma'amados. Ma'amados means that when the Korban Tavid was brought twice a day, there were members, representatives of Klal Yisrael, had to be there standing over the Havas HaKorban, because the law in Korbanos is that the Bala Korban should be there at the time of the Avoda of his Korban. So the Kohanim are doing their avodah. The Levim are singing their songs on the Duchan, which is a kind of a platform. The Israel is standing on the Ma'amados, and the Korban Tamid is being brought. And in all these cases, we have a principle called Osek B'mitzvah Potem in a mitzvah. If they're involved in one mitzvah, they're exempt from another mitzvah. Therefore, they don't have to daven. And not only that, they don't have to wear tefillin, because Osek B'mitzvah Potem in a mitzvah. So how is this relevant to our discussion about Kohen and wearing tefillin? My love, im he nichon einon chotzitzos. If you're careful about reading the language of the Brice doesn't say that they're not allowed to wear tefillin. The Brice only says that potim in a tefillin. And the Brice is addressing not only Yisraelim, but Kohanim and Levim as well. So the Kohanim are doing their avodah, and they're allowed to wear tefillin. It's optional. They can take advantage of Hosek B'mitzvah, Potem B'mitzvah, and omit tefillin, but if they want to be very pious about it, they're allowed to wear tefillin. And therefore the avodah is still kosher. What happened to Rav Ami's halacha that tefillin is yitur b'gadim? It's an extra beged. So the Gemara answers, lo, that's not what the Brice has in mind. Im he nichon chotzitzos, that if he went ahead and he wore the tefillin, it is a chatzitza. Okay, So the Gemara says, Ihachi, if that be the case, Peturin, why does the Brisa say that they're potim in a tefillin, asurim iboile? The Brisa should have gone much more emphatically and tell you they're not allowed to wear tefillin because the tefillin is a yitur b'gadim, and that's a violation of the Isur of Kohen. So the Gemara says, Kavan, the Ika Levir the Israel, since the Brisa is addressing not just the situation of the Kohanim, but also of the Israelim and the Levim, the Lo Masnale, Asur, and it would be totally inappropriate to use the word Asur with regard to Levim and Israelim. Again, they're potter from Tefillin, they're potter from Tefillin because also mitzvah, potter mitzvah, but they're not enjoined from wearing Tefillin. Mishum Hachi Tani Peturin, so use the word Peturin, which is common and appropriate for all three groups, but as far as Kohanim is concerned, it's Asur because of Yitur B'Gadim. Gemara asks another kasha now. For Tanya, we have a brisa that says, Emei Nichon Einon Chotzitzos, that explicitly, that if they went ahead, the Kohanim, and they wore the tefillin, that's not considered a chatzitz, a low kasha. Ha diyad, ha devosh. If they put on tefillin shel yad, is that's not called yitur b'gadim? Again, we have to worry about chatzitza. But as far as yitur b'gadim is concerned, tefillin shel yad is not called a beged. Only tefillin shel rush, which you wear on your head, that's called a beged. That's a pe'er. That's like a beautiful adornment or a crown worn on the head. And the Brisa, when the Brisa says that this is not a chatzitza, that's tefillin shel rosh. And tefillin shel rosh is not considered a chatzitza. One second, let me go over this one more time. Lo kasha hadiyad, that which Rav Ami reported to us, that tefillin is a chatzitza, that's tefillin shel yad, because that's not called a beged. And if it's not a beged, then it's a chatzitza. And basically, there are two reasons why you could object to wearing tefillin shel yad. One is because of chatzitza, and the other because it's an extra beged. So, as far as the extra beged is concerned, tefillin shel yad is not considered a beged. And not only that, tefillin shel rosh is also not considered a beged. So you don't have an issue of yitur b'gadim. All you have an issue is chatzitza. But the Brisa that says that there's no issue in chatzitza is addressing the case of tefillin shel rosh, because tefillin shel rosh is not a chatzitza. So on the one hand, tefillin is not a levush, so there's no issue of yitur b'gadim, and that's very relevant for tefillin shel rosh, because the only other issue besides yitur b'gadim is chatzitza, and in the case of tefillin shel rosh, there's no chatzitza. It's not separating his b'gadim from his body, because he's wearing the tefillin shel rosh in a place where there is no hat. You know, he's not wearing a turban. In tefillin shel yad, on the other hand, okay, you don't have a problem of yitur b'gadim, but you do have a problem of chatzitza.
Why can't yitur b'gadim if it's a beged?
Oh, so we're saying now, at this point in the Gemara, that tefillin is not a beged.
Even the yad?
But neither the yad nor the rush.
Ah.
It's not called a levush. The Gemara is making an about face. Until now, we were assuming that at least the tefillin shel rosh should be a levush, but now we're saying it's not a levush, and therefore there's no psul of yitur b'gadim. Ela what? There might be a psul of chatzitza, but that only applies to tefillin shel yad, which physically separates between the beged and his body. But in tefillin shel rosh, there's no chatzitza. So the Gemara clarifies this. Maishna diyad. Why is it that yad is considered a chatzitza d'chsiv? Because with regard to the kutones, which is one on the top part of the body of the Kohen, it says, Yilbash al b'soro, shelo yedor chotzeis beino l'b'soro. There should be nothing separated between his body, his flesh, and the beged. And in the case of tefillin shel yad, there is a chatzitza. But d'rosh nami, even in the case of rosh, it says, k'siv, the Torah says, v'samtam it's nefes, he should wear the turban al rosho. And just like in Al Basar, you say it has to be directly in contact with his basar, so too in the case of Al Rosh, it has to be directly in contact with his head. There should be no chatzitza between the mitznefes and the head of the Kohen. Now, at this point, the Gemara is assuming that the tefillin shel rosh is underneath the mitznefes, and it separates the mitznefes from the rosh. So the Gemara answers, Tana, Sa'aro. Okay, now the Torah, now the Gemara is talking, and the Brice is addressing the case of a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol has to wear not just a mitznefes, like every Kohen has to wear, but he also has to wear what's called a tzitz. And the tzitz is worn on the forehead. And the Brice tells us that, let's say, you know, the Kohen has a lot of hair, Baruch Hashem, right? He has a lot of hair. So this hair that sticks out between the mitznefes, that's the turban that he's wearing on his hat, and the tzitz, there's a little bit of a space between the hat, the mitznefes, which he wears on the high part of his head, and the tzitz, which is worn on his forehead. Shesham menichin tefillin, and that's indeed where he wears tefillin. So again, it's quite clear now from the Braisa that there's no problem of chatzitza in the case of tefillin, because there's a space on his head between the mitznefes and where he wears his tefillin, and in that space he's going to wear his tefillin, and that's where we're going to stop for today. Well, you know what? Maybe, I'm just thinking out loud. Yeah, you know what? I think we're going to stop here, because at this point we have a new sugya called Mechusar Kippurim. We mentioned Mechusar Kippurim in the past, but we didn't get up to it. So again, yeah, let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're on the top line on your tests. On your test, some advice. Okay, then?
Good page.
Great. Now, for the Ian Shia today, I have some pages.